Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Well, coming up today, we go over to Mariazell in Austria, where Pope Benedict celebrated a special Mass Saturday, marking 9 centuries since the Marian Shrine was founded. Our correspondent in Austria will be taking us on a pilgrimage along with the Pope, so do stay with us over the next half hour for full coverage of the Holy Father's 7th pastoral trip abroad. Benedict traveled from Vienna to Mariazell Saturday to join pilgrims in celebrating the Virgin Mary's birthday and the ancient shrine dedicated to her there. Veronica Scarisbrick is in Austria with the Pope. She takes us on our own pilgrimage with the Holy Father.
Mariazell is a tiny hamlet high in the Styrian Alps, a sleepy place with neat pink houses and only 3 roads. But on Saturday it was anything but sleepy. Pope Benedict was there on pilgrimage, and well over 30,000 pilgrims were there to greet him. Among them, representatives of the Austrian Church, from bishops to Austrians from all the parishes across the country, from different lay movements, men and women religious, candidates to the priesthood, and of course, people from all walks of life and from other nations. Dominated by a great basilica, originally Romanesque turned Gothic in the 14th century and Baroque in the 17th, the final result may be a little original, but is nevertheless harmonious. The facade, in fact, has a narrow Gothic spire, caught between the opulence of 2 onion domes, characteristic of churches in Eastern Europe. Painted in white with pink piping picking up the colour of the houses, it provided a little splash of colour in the misty rain. The weather was appalling, and in the morning the Pope had to change his plans and come here by car instead of by helicopter as previously planned. And when he'd covered the 90 miles or so south of Vienna up a windy road, everyone, many in yellow anoraks over traditional dress, were eager to hear him speak, and when he did so, he said, "With our great pilgrimage to Mariazell, we are celebrating the feast of Our Lady's birthday. For 8.5 centuries, pilgrims have been travelling here from different peoples and nations. They come here to pray," he said, "for the intentions of their hearts and homelands, bringing here their deepest hopes and concerns. In this way, Mariazell has become a place of peace and reconciled unity, not only for Austria, but far beyond her borders." Mariazell is, in fact, the most popular Marian shrine in the whole of Central Europe, drawing pilgrims from all the neighbouring nations. They came even at the time of the so-called Iron Curtain. Our Lady here is, after all, significantly referred to with a triple title: Magna Mater Austriae of the Austrians, Mater Gentium Slavorum of the Slav people, Magna Hungarorum Domina of the Hungarians.
In die große Pilgerschaft viele Jahrhunderte.
"Today we join in this great centuries-old faith," Pope Benedict remarked. "We rest a while with the Mother of our Lord and we pray to her. Show us Jesus." Earlier, shortly after his arrival in Mariazell, Pope Benedict had gone straight into the Basilica. It's here that the tiny Lindenwood Romanesque statue of Our Lady with the Christ child on her lap, which so many pilgrims come here to venerate, is housed. A statue which can only be seen without her precious silver garment and crown, 3 days a year. And Saturday is one of them, not just because the Pope is there for Jubilee celebrations, but because it's the feast of Our Lady's birthday. But getting back to the homily, the Pope read it during the open-air Mass he presided over, celebrated immediately outside the Basilica. And the statue of Mariazell was taken outdoors and placed to the right of the altar for the occasion. All the while it continued to pour with rain, and one could spy the bishops sitting there in their azure blue vestments, the colours of Our Lady, under flimsy transparent raincoats. Pope Benedict, in these same vestments, was a little more protected under an awning. In his homily at this Marian shrine, Pope Benedict also put the message of pilgrimages into context. He'd already remarked in his arrival speech at the airport in Vienna on Friday that pilgrimages are not just about shrines.
Diese Resignation der Wahrheit gegenüber ist meiner Überzeugung nach der Kern.
One should not be resigned to the idea that man is incapable of truth, the Pope stressed, as if this were more than we could cope with. This resignation with regard to truth lies at the heart of the crisis of the West, the crisis of Europe. If truth does not exist for man, then he cannot distinguish between good and evil. And then the great and wonderful discoveries of science become double-edged. They can open up significant possibilities for good, for the benefit of mankind, but also, as we see only too clearly, they can pose a terrible threat involving destruction of man and the world. We need truth.
Wir brauchen Wahrheit.
The Pope then invited all present to overcome their fears and to look towards Jesus, precisely as we see him in the shrine of Marienzell, as we see him as a child in his mother's arms.
Das Kind Jesus erinnert uns natürlich auch an alle Kinder dieser Welt, in denen auf uns zugehen will.
The child Jesus, he remarked, reminds us of all the children of the world in whom he wishes to come to us. Children who live in poverty, children who are exploited as soldiers, who have never been able to experience the love of parents, sick and suffering children, but also those who are joyful and healthy. Europe has fewer and fewer children. We want everything for ourselves and place little trust in the future. Yet the world will be deprived of a future only when the forces of the human heart and of the reason, enlightened by the heart, no longer exist. When the face of God no longer shines upon the earth, where God is, there is future.
Wo Gott ist, da ist Zukunft.
Pope Benedict then ended his homily focusing on the leitmotif of his pilgrimage, a theme which also represents the hallmark of his pontificate, and is an invitation to all Christians to be, as the Lord taught us, witnesses to Christ. Christ on a divine mission, not as a mere moralist or social reformer. Look to Christ, he said.
Zeige uns Jesus. Mit dieser Bitte zur Mutter des Herrn haben wir uns hierher auf den Weg gemacht. Diese Bitte begleitet uns zurück in den Alltag hinein. Und wir wissen, dass Maria unsere Bitte erhört. Ja.
One pontifical organization in Vienna looks to Christ through the faces of small children. Father Leo Mausberg is head of the Pontifical Mission Societies in Austria. He explained in what way kids have been involved in this papal journey, beginning with preparing a poster and a surprise to welcome the Holy Father.
This poster expresses the responsibility of the Holy Father in regard to children. So he embraces, and that picture is taken from Aparecida, from his visit in Aparecida.
In Brazil, his last journey.
Right. Four children of different colors and nationalities. So it's a very beautiful picture to express that the Holy Father bears a responsibility for the holy infancia, for the holy childhood in the whole world.
For the future of the world.
For the future of the world. The children are the future of the world, so it's better that we look after them.
So you actually organized a project in which children are involved with the Holy Father, is that correct?
Yes, we have a number of projects, and one of the projects which we have presented to the Bishops' Conference in order that it should be supported by the donations given to the Holy Father on the occasion of his arrival was a project in Uganda for children soldiers to reintegrate them into society once they have the possibility to leave their commanders, they're little devils, I would call them, because to turn a child into a killing machine is really the work of the devil. So as soon as they have the possibility to flee, or they are taken out, or there's a peace settlement, we have a huge project in Uganda to reintegrate them in society, because they are traumatized to the uttermost.
So how was this connected to the Pope's visit?
Well, we have chosen the the motto in Austria, to look to Jesus. Auf Christus schauen, to look towards Jesus. And we have asked all the children of Austria to write to the Holy Father to tell them what they feel that means. What does it mean for the child concretely to look to Jesus? So we involve the children in the awareness of the arrival of the Holy Father, and we involve the children to reflect, maybe together with their parents, about the religious theme, which is quite rare probably nowadays, that the family speaks together about a religious theme. And we got hundreds of letters from the children, which we're going to hand over to the Holy Father. We bound them in two big books, and they are really beautiful letters. The children express themselves so beautifully, either through paintings or through writing, and they write to the Holy Father what it means for them to look towards Jesus.
Were you surprised by the content of the letters and of the pictures? I suppose they drew some pictures as well, no?
Yes, I was surprised. I was very surprised because the children are so original. They have all kinds of ideas. They paint Jesus, and then part of Jesus is the Pope, the face of the Pope. Or they write in very familiar terms to the Holy Father. Dear Holy Father, we are from this and this parish. We have no organ. We need an organ. Couldn't you help us? They have all kinds of ideas, and it would be nice maybe to excerpt some of the letters because they're so original. I have them here.
Can you read them?
I can read them.
They're neatly bound in a book, I see.
Yes, they are.
And very colourful.
Very colourful. And just if we opened it by ransom, and I try to translate, Dear Mr. Pope, we live in Pillichsdorf. Our church is being renovated. Therefore, we celebrate Mass in our parish priest's home. When the church will be beautiful, come and visit us. Our whole community will be very happy to see you. Greetings from Julia and Judith.
There's an eye there, the eye of God.
Yes, that's a picture. And it says, to look towards Jesus, and there's a big eye, and then a pointer towards a person. So I think it's extremely, extremely interesting to see also the paintings. There's a painting all of parallel circles in green and blue. Or another text. Dear Paps, dear Papa, Abba, dear Paps, I'm not sure what I should write to you, but it is the most important, it's your main role, your extremely big role to replace Jesus and God, because God has chosen the Pope that he should replace Jesus.
So look to Christ.
Look to Christ. But the child says replace Jesus, no? It's very original. They have all kinds of ideas. There are hundreds and hundreds of letters.
Do you want to talk to me about some of the projects that that you work on? Obviously, Austria has always had this tradition of being very generous towards other nations, particularly in the developing world. Now, you're the Pontifical Mission Societies in Austria.
Yes, they are. The Austrians are still very generous because especially the elder generation still remembers the Second World War. And so we have our main group of donors are the elderly. This is going to pose a problem in the future, but so far they are still alive and they are very generous. We are not so confident whether the young generations will be as generous as they old were. Austria is also in between. It was always very close to the Iron Curtain. So now that the Iron Curtain has fallen, we are incommunicado, we can talk to each other. Many people from Eastern Europe come to the Holy Father's visit because the Holy Father is going to Mariazell, which is the shrine of the old Austrian-Hungarian monarchy. And all the peoples of the monarchy, they see that shrine as their shrine, whether they come from Hungary or from Ukraine or from Czechia or Slovakia. There will be probably hundreds of buses coming from those countries. And we have apart from the missionary societies, our four societies, we have also a fifth, which is called Pro Europa, which we have taken over from the Austrian Bishops' Conference. In olden days, that means in communist times, this was the European Aid Fund. The European Aid Fund helped to finance, to support, to establish a contact with the underground church in the different communist countries. After the opening, after 88, the European Aid Fund was divided up between Austria and Germany founded the Renovabis, which is now responsible for the aid campaigns for Eastern Europe in Germany. And in Austria, we have Pro Europa, our institution, which helps the country, especially the parishes in their pastoral projects in Eastern Europe. We have a strong emphasis on Romania because the need, we are very aware of those needs in Eastern Europe. And I must say that also very kindly some Italian bishops support our efforts towards Eastern Europe with mass stipends because they are aware that Austria is at that
turning point
between East and West. And we support those parishes and sometimes the Orthodox Church with financial support.
Can you describe some of the projects that you're actually involved in right now that come to mind that are particularly significant in your view?
Well, in Eastern Europe, it's the rebuilding of the churches. There are hundreds and thousands of churches which need to be restored or parish houses with the uniates, with the united church. We have many married priests which need support for their families so that they are free for pastoral work. And this is our main emphasis in Eastern Europe. The parish institutions, the parish employees, and the parish buildings. The concept of mission is changing. Now the big migration streams, for example, into Europe, they are also missionary country because they have no structures, there's no church accompanying them. Whether they come from Latin America, through Spain, France, they come right into Austria, or whether they come from the Arabic countries, then they are missionary people. They are not a missionary country, but they're missionary people. And also the documents mention the suburbs of the big cities where you might, in theory, have ecclesiastical structures, but in practice there is nothing and people don't know where to turn or there's nobody to evangelize them. We have, and we support an initiative in Austria, for example, to evangelize Islam, to get into dialogue on a day-to-day level with the people, and especially those who come from areas which have been in contact with Christianity, and there are a number of conversions.
Father Leo Mausberg is head of the Pontifical Mission Societies in Austria. Before going to Mariazell, Pope Benedict was in Vienna at the start of his trip on Friday, where he was received in private audience by President Heinz Fischer in the Imperial Hofburg Palace. Following that meeting, the Pope delivered a key speech to authorities and diplomats, as well as intellectuals, such as rectors of universities and representatives of key international organizations. Veronica listened in for us and filed this report.
Beginning his address, he highlighted how this meeting reflected the good relations marked by a reciprocal trust between Austria and the Holy See, remarking too how Austria is a model of social solidarity. He then listed examples of this across the world. On a more historical note, the Pope went on to underline the role of Austria at a crossroads between Eastern and Western Europe. A nation which was once at the heart of an empire, unifying vast areas of Central and Eastern Europe, and where today the process of unification remains a most significant achievement. Europe, he stressed, cannot and must not deny her Christian roots.
Seine Worte sind aufmerksam gehört worden
Christianity has profoundly shaped this continent, something clearly evident in this nation. And the shrine at Mariazell in particular is a meeting place for the different peoples of Europe. It's one of those places where men and women have drawn and continue to draw strength from on high. Pope Benedict also touched on a number of key issues like the European model of life, one he described as being under the pressure of modern economic forces and facing great challenges. He then invited politicians to regulate and limit globalization so it does not occur at the expense of the poorer nations and of the poor and wealthier nations, with the effect of proving detrimental to future generations. It was in Europe, he went to say, that the notion of human rights was first formulated, and he specified the fundamental human right is the right to life itself. Abortion cannot be a human right, nor can the so-called actively assisted death. Moving on to another crucial issue, Pope Benedict spoke of the European heritage as a tradition of thought, which considers essential a substantial correspondence between faith, truth, and reason. Finally, Pope Benedict outlined the role of the European Union, its responsibility in assuming a role of leadership in the fight against global poverty, and its efforts to promote peace.
One of the issues concerning the international community most is the prospect of nuclear terrorism and the concomitant need to end the proliferation of nuclear arms and to safely eliminate current stockpiles. Well, the Holy See's permanent observer to the Vienna-based International Atomic Energy Agency, Monsignor Michael Banach, spoke to Susie Hodges ahead of the Holy Father's discourse to diplomats.
We have seen a move away from nuclear weapons. The superpowers who possess these weapons are searching to diminish their stockpile. But there are some significant challenges that still lie ahead. One of them, of course, is the reality of terrorism. And we speak today about nuclear terrorism, the fact that nuclear weapons or agents that are used to develop nuclear weapons might fall into the hands of people that are going to use them for destructive purposes instead of for peaceful purposes. So certainly the whole question of nuclear terrorism is a major issue. I also think that one of the other issues that's important is to recognize the connection that exists between nuclear disarmament and nuclear non-proliferation. Those may be technical terms, but they are realities that are interdependent, and they mutually reinforce one another. And a responsible implementation of nuclear disarmament and nuclear non-proliferation, I think, represents one of the major instruments, not only in the fight against nuclear terrorism, but also in the concrete realization of a culture of life and of peace that's capable of promoting in an effective way the integral development of people.
And when it comes to long-standing disputes like the current dispute over Iran's nuclear program, are you optimistic that an eventual peaceful solution to this can be found, that there won't be a resort to armed force?
Dialogue is the only way to ensure that there is not a recourse to armed force. And the Holy See is obviously in favor of dialogue, promotes dialogue, interreligious dialogue, dialogue between cultures, and dialogue between nations. And certainly in recent times, the International Atomic Energy Agency has also been promoting dialogue between the agency itself and Iran, between the agency and in North Korea. And as long as people are willing to sit across the table from each other and openly, frankly, to discuss the realities, but as well as differences, yes, I am confident that these outstanding issues can be resolved in a peaceful manner.
And when it comes to the nuclear power governments themselves, how optimistic are you that in the coming years there'll be a move by these governments away from the view that nuclear arms can ensure the security of their countries?
In 2005, there was a less than satisfactory outcome of the preparatory committee for the upcoming 2010 review conference of the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons. What I think that less than satisfactory outcome demonstrates is that there was a prevalence of individual interests rather than an emphasis on collective security. Over the past few years, the world has changed. The world is rapidly changing. And I think it's to be noted that there's a growing awareness of how the interests of national security are also deeply connected with the interests of international security. And once that interdependence is acknowledged, I think it's all the more evident how that non-proliferation of nuclear weapons treaty can become a fundamental pillar in nuclear non-proliferation, furnishing a legal basis not only for international verification on nuclear material, but also for the elimination of nuclear weapons.
But given, as you say, that less than satisfactory outcome of the 2005 conference, I mean, what are then the chances of a successful outcome for this review conference coming up in 2010?
Of course, we're Christians, and the Holy See, as Christians, made up of Christians, is an optimistic international actor. So, yes, I am optimistic that that there will be a move toward a more satisfactory conclusion of the 2010 review conference. I think what I perceive, what I hear going on in the international sphere, there are certain things that are moving in that direction. I think there's a growing awareness that the international community needs to become more ambitious in making the Non-Proliferation Treaty an adequate instrument in the promotion of peace and international security. And in order to accomplish this, I think nations are developing an innovative approach on determining legal, political, and technical requirements to promote effectively the objectives of the treaty. So given that new climate, the raising of awareness, I am optimistic that differences will be overcome, and we can look forward in hope to a successful outcome of the 2010 conference.
Do you think there's also a moral message, given that if countries were to disarm in the field of nuclear weapons or nuclear proliferation, that there would be a lot of money saved and that those resources could be spent on other much more pressing needs?
Pope Benedict XVI, in his 2006 message for the World Day of Peace, addressed this issue. And there he stated that what can be said about those governments which count nuclear arms as a means of ensuring the security of their countries. And he went on to say, along with countless persons of goodwill, one can state that this point of view is not only baneful, but also completely fallacious. In a nuclear war, there would be no victors, only victims. The truth of peace requires that all agree to change their course by clear and firm decisions and strive for a progressive and concerted nuclear disarmament. He concluded by saying that the resources which would be saved could then be employed in projects of development capable of benefiting all people, especially the poor.
Monsignor Michael Banach is the Holy See's permanent observer to the International Atomic Energy Agency there in Vienna.
Well, that brings today's program to an end, but we'll be back tomorrow at the same time with more coverage of Pope Benedict's 7th Apostolic Trip Abroad from Veronica Scarisbrick, who is there in Austria with the Pope. Until then, I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining us.
Laudator Jesus Christus.